Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome, Geekazoids, to the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, and we have a very special guest with us today, Mr. Larry Roberts from November's Doom. Welcome back to the Metal Geeks podcast, sir.
Very happy to be here, dude.
This is a continuation of our musical-based chat we just did on the last episode of MSRcast, where we talked about the brand new November's Doom album, Nephilim Grove, and we played a lot of music from that, and we just had a keeping it metal the whole time.
Pretty much.
Now we get to keep it geeky.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about that.
All right. Let's get into it, man. So we haven't really chatted in about a year. So what have you been up to, man? How you been?
I'm doing okay. You know, just been super busy. Obviously, as I just discussed in the other discussion, this year has been really busy with music stuff because of the new album finally coming out. So that's taken up a lot of time. Of course, I've been really busy with my podcast, with Geeking Poetic Podcast. That takes up a lot of time too, but it's a labor of love, you know. Mostly doing that. Still finding time to spend money on toys and things that I shouldn't be.
Right.
Should not be doing, but, you know, I try to curtail it as much as I can, but,
sometimes that's just very hard to do.
Yeah, and it's kind of the thing that keeps me sane, you know,
what are you really into collecting right now?
You know, one of the things that it's not exactly new, but it's newish. It's new to me. Was I was a little late to the game when about the whole Transformers, the G1 reissues that started coming out. Like, I think it was mainly like a Walmart kind of thing.
Right.
Like
I think you're right.
Walmart exclusive kind of thing. But I'm not like a massive Transformers guy. You know, for one thing, there's just so much of it. There's been so many iterations of it over the years and stuff and everything. But when it comes to Transformers, one of the things that I love the most is the G1 stuff. You know, that was right at the tail end of my childhood. You know, Transformers really first hit around 84 here. And at that point I was like around 11 years old. So I was like, that's like perfect Transformer age. You know what I mean? So I loved those first ones.
Yeah. But it was right in my wheelhouse because 84, I would have been about 10.
So, right.
Yeah, it was like perfect for me. That and you know, He-Man and everything.
Yeah, those were all the things that were sort of at the very end there before I just kind of drifted off of toys and stuff.
It's pretending like you're too old for this crap when you're like,
right. I still always liked it, you know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't play with it anymore.
Right.
You know, I was trying to play guitar and find girls to play with, you know, so, and all that kind of
more expensive toys.
Stuff. Yeah. Well, I stopped buying Transformers and started buying guitars, you know, and things like that. But, I haven't owned a Transformer in ages, like any of the G1 stuff. That stuff had long been lost, and, some of that stuff ended up, you know, I gave it to neighbor kids and stuff like that. You know,
I did the same thing with my Star Wars stuff.
Oh, I know.
I hated it.
I know. Isn't that terrible?
I remember my mom's like, we should put it all in a, like a big, like black trash bag. And then my Boy Scout troop came over and they were like, just pulling stuff out of it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm too old for this stuff. Y'all can have it. But inside I was crying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know. I'm glad, you know, it's interesting because it's a double-edged sword. I'm glad that nowadays a lot of parents have a different attitude towards it because they grew up experiencing that, or they just kind of know a little bit more about the hobby and stuff to realize, like, hey, these might actually be worth having. But at the same time, going through that experience is what made us who we are now. Like, because that's, you know, almost every kid that went through that, that had that garage sale or that black garbage bag full of toys being given away.
Yeah.
Or in my case, I had a father who went on a cleaning house rampage when I was around 14 and threw everything away.
Oh.
Like, just threw all my toys. And along with that, I had boxes in my toy boxes. I also had other things that I very much did not want to get rid of, like all my tour books I'd collected up to that point.
Oh, wow.
So I had like early Iron Maiden and Kiss and Alice Cooper and all these concerts I'd seen when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old. And my dad threw it all away on me. And that's a whole other story. But
that was my college fund, Dad.
Yeah, that was. But from that is what ended up, you know, years later turning me into an adult collector, because mm-hmm. it was that nostalgia I had for all those things that I never really wanted to let go of. But yeah, I didn't. So I haven't had any of those old G1 Transformers for ages. And of course, as you know, they're worth a mint. They're so expensive.
They really are.
And finding them in the box, or even just finding them in good, complete condition, because there's so many parts and everything, is really hard. So I just never really became an adult Transformers collector because of that. I'd buy some of the new stuff here and there of certain things, you know, Beast Wars and other things that came later. But when I got wind of how cool these new G1 reissues were, I was like, okay, I gotta get them. And I was like, well, I saw Hot Rod first, and I was like, all right, well, I'll get Hot Rod. You know, I don't need to go crazy with this. And then it was like, oh, but man, I got to get Optimus. I mean, come on, you got to get Prime, you know? No. So then I got that.
Prime's in his name. He's just Prime one to get.
Right. And then somebody else pointed out to me and was like, well, you know, they made, they made Soundwave. And I'm like,
I would love to have Soundwave.
Right. So at this point, I think I have all of the reissues they've done so far. There's not a ton of them, but God, how many are there? The last one I just picked up was Starscream and everything. So, and you know, you can get them for a reasonable price. And I know that they're reproductions, and some people don't like reproductions and blah, blah, blah. But, man, it just puts a smile on my face to see them sitting there, you know, like to see these. They don't look exactly like the originals, which is cool. So, you know, there's no way you can pass this off to anybody that knows what they're doing. Right. As you know, it's as a fake that they'd get scammed with.
Have they done Megatron yet?
Not. I don't think they have over here. No,
okay.
They have been putting some of those out. The reissues have been coming out overseas and stuff and everything. So I don't believe that's been reissued here yet, stateside. But you have to be careful if you order the overseas ones, because there are a lot of Chinese fakes.
Oh, really?
Being made of those. Yeah, you got to be careful. You think you're getting the actual Japanese one and everything, and then you get it, and then you go, wait a minute, you know, this isn't quite right. And it turns out it's because, just like with a lot of other things, you know, like if you buy an iPhone from somebody on eBay that's out of China, and then you get it, and you find out, like, this is not an actual iPhone.
There's a lot of fake in the Funko world, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, anything that gets big like that and has, like, collectability to it, they will immediately fake. So, yeah, for anybody out there, just be careful if you go on eBay or anything and you are looking for...
If it looks too good to be true, it probably is a fake.
Probably, you know, but yeah, just be careful, be mindful of that, and everything. But yeah, those I love. I've still been, you know, trying, there's so much of it, but I've still been trying to like keep up with a lot of the Black Series, Star Wars, you know, especially now with the new movie coming out and with The Mandalorian, and they've already started releasing toys for both.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I was able to get. I got the Funko the Funko Shop exclusive Mandalorian in different pose.
Oh, nice!
It was like one of the, I guess, a New York Comic Con exclusive type of deal. But first time I ever really ordered from their web shop, and everybody's always talking about how hard it is to find to get these things. And I was lucky enough to get one. It was cool. I was going to go back to Megatron real quick. So I'm just wondering if there's going to be the G1 original, they can't redo that as the transform into the gun here in America anymore, can they?
I think you can do a gun. I mean, it's not a very realistic looking gun, you know. I think you can make it to the gun, but there's all sorts of codes about how it looks and all that. I'm not sure, especially since these are not being marketed as being child's toys. These are supposed to be, you know, I think I'd have to look at the packages and see what they say, but if they're marked as like for adult collectors, I think if they do that, they're okay, but don't quote me on that. So yeah, I'll be curious to see what next, if anything, you know, comes out from these reissues. I hope that Walmart keeps putting them out here.
Do you still get to go the experience of going to a store and searching for stuff? Do you still do that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's so
few and far between now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And
you go to Target, and the Target has the same shit every time.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, they really do just kind of expect you to just buy online. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to Target.com, you can find stuff on there much easier than, you know. But, and then speaking of that, I'm so mad because on Force Friday this year, I got on Target.com, and they had an exclusive Mandalorian Black Series figure that was in like carbonized metal paint deco. It was on there. They just put it for sale. I bought it, paid for it, all that stuff, and I'm still waiting for it. I keep getting messages from them saying, sorry, that item was backordered. I'm going,
holy crap.
How the hell was it backordered? How does your website not set up in a way that once so many orders were sold that it just made it unavailable to order? Because there's other stuff on there that was marked, you know, temporarily sold out and everything, but this was not. So, like, how did that happen? It just really makes me mad because you go on Amazon or eBay and people that did get it are selling it for like $100. And I'm going, bullshit. You know, I bought it for whatever it was, $22.99 on Target. I went on there as soon as it was released. How did mine somehow manage to get backordered? It just ticks me off, but yeah, it's the way it is. But yeah, I mean, I do still go, to the stores. I mean, usually if I go, to Target or I go to Meijer.
I remember Meijer.
Yeah, we've got Meijer stores up here, and Meijer's pretty good. They seem to have gotten better. I'm just really amazed that these big box stores like that have not upped their game in terms of like their toy aisles since Toys R Us is gone. I really thought that, like, okay, here's their chance. Here's the chance for Walmart and Target and them to like just take over any of that market, you know. And if anything, the Walmart one, especially the Walmart toy aisle, is atrocious. Yeah.
I think it's because I know the company is trying, but they don't have people working in those departments that even know what's going on, is the saying.
Yeah. I think there's been so much. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because there's been so much mishap going on in those departments. Like, you'll go to Walmart, and they're supposed to, like, on days like Force Friday, they're supposed to put new product out, and there's nothing.
Right. I went to Target on Force Friday. I got off of work and went to Force Friday. It was about, you know, 5:30 already. You know, like, I'm gonna go see what they have left, and I couldn't see anything. So I go to the electronics department, all this new redesign they've done. I'm like,
yeah.
Did you guys put any Star Wars stuff out today? They're like, oh yeah, we put out some this morning. It sold out, but we have this Boba Fett Funko Pop. I'm like, okay, can I have one of those? And they're just hidden behind the counter, you know? I'm like,
right. Well, then that's the other thing is, so then it seems like, especially at Walmart, you either have situations where they have it and it's sitting in rotting in the back room because nobody's putting it out on the floor because they're still waiting for, you know, Last Jedi figures to sell out, which is like never going to happen.
Right.
And they're doing that, or I'll go to a different Walmart and I'll find figures that are actually on the shelves and I go to buy them and I can't because they put them out way too early before their street date.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I had that happen with some of that happened to me at a Meijer store. I went to a Meijer. This was like 2 weeks before Force Friday. And I walk in and I find some of the, Rise of Skywalker figures. Mm. And I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe they have these out already. These aren't supposed to be out till October 4th or whatever it was. I go up to the register and
can't sell them.
And they wouldn't sell them to me. So I went back the next day and they were still there and I found a workaround.
No, did you?
So all I did was basically just, I probably shouldn't say what I did. I don't want to give people bad ideas.
Okay.
But,
we can talk offline about that.
Yeah. I didn't steal them or anything, you know.
I think I have a feeling of what you did.
Yeah. I mean, cause there were other figures that were sellable and everything.
That's what I was thinking. You just return those and,
scan one and bag the other. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all the same price. So yeah, I was like, screw that. And if they're going to put them out, I'm getting them. I know some people are mad about that, but
I did that at Target the morning I knew all the Haunted Mansion stuff was coming out.
Gotcha.
I got there. I went there before work when they opened up. I got there right at 8 o'clock. There was one other person that was like waiting for stuff with me. And there was one disoriented guy starting to put shit out on the shelves, not knowing anything going on. We're like, oh, yeah, we want one of all those. He's like, wait, what? So can you open that box? We want those. And this other girl, she was like, yeah, I was going to buy this whole box. I'm like, no, I want one of each, dude. She was like, oh, fine. I was like, but then I went to another Target later. And I'm like, all right, so do you have, where's the Haunted Mansion stuff that came out today? Like, oh, I think we have all that in the back. And they had it in the back for like 2 weeks.
Right.
I'm like,
right.
It's so weird.
Yeah, they can't be bothered. You know, they don't care. They can't be bothered with it. And unfortunately, I don't know. I don't work in that end of the business, so I don't know. But to me, it seems like manufacturers and stuff should just be screaming blue murder about that because it's hurting their business, you know,
for sure.
I mean, you know, obviously the workers at the stores couldn't give two shits, you know, they're getting paid minimum and everything. Right. And, you know, I get it. And Target makes, you know, toys and all that shit are basically just loss leaders for them anyway, because they want people to come in and buy, you know, couches and flat screen TVs and whatnot, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I understand, but it's just a shame. I mean, this is exactly what I was worried about when Toys R Us closed. As I said, you know, a lot of snarky people said, oh, who cares? Toys R Us sucked anyway, and they were overpriced and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, that's not even entirely the point, man. You know, it's like, it's bad for the toy industry. Yeah. In general, if you're a toy collector, you don't want to see all the retailers who actually do give a shit about toys. I don't, you know, overpriced or not, you don't want to see them just go the way of the dodo bird, you know, because that's just going to hurt the business in the long run. And I knew all these people said, like I said, all these people said, oh, well, Walmart's going to go create. Maybe they'll open like, you know, a whole new, you know, maybe Walmart or open their own version of a toy store. I'm like, shit, not only are they not going to do that, they didn't even take care of the toy section they had. I mean, the Walmarts over by me are horrible.
So let me ask you this. This is the only place I've ever seen it. If you ever walk into a Walmart and go to the toy aisle and you see a Marvel package that has like some off-branded like Power Ranger or something in it, do you see that a lot?
Yeah, when people, yeah.
They don't know. They just take a return and they stick it back on the shelf. It's like, it says Captain America, but it's like a bright purple Power Ranger in the box or right. DC character or something, you know?
Right, yep.
Or something they bought from the dollar store and just replaced it, you know?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. You know, it's a shame. You know, I don't know. They sit there and say, well, you know, there's not a lot of money to be made anymore in the toy. That's horse shit. That's bullshit. Kids still love toys. Mm-hmm. It's all about how you're putting it out there for them and how you're creating.
How you're marketing it and how you're putting it on display. And
right. And how you're creating the right environment for them and for the parents who are going to be taking mm-hmm. them there and buying the stuff. There's ways to do it. And they can argue with me all day long about it because I don't have a Harvard degree in marketing or anything like that. But I've been around enough to know. I owned a business, you know. I owned a little collectible store for, 5 years. Yep. So, you know, I learned a lot even just from that on a small scale, how it works, you know.
But, one thing people don't know about Walmart right now is it's unadvertised, but every single new video game release – is about 20% less than any other store.
Right.
So you could walk in there, like I bought the new Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order game. It was $49 in the store. It's $59 everywhere else. They don't really advertise it, but it's on the shelf. If you go look there, I'm like, there's the price. Because they can afford to take a hit off that one video game because I know I bought groceries while I was there too. You know, I bought all this other shit. That you walk into a GameStop, you buy the game, that's all you're going to buy. You know what I mean?
It's a loss leader.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a loss leader. Well, here's the other thing, too, getting into slightly more nefarious business things that Walmart does. Here's another thing people don't understand, too. I mean, we're all cost conscious, you know, we're all pinching pennies and, you know, and everything. I mean, we can't afford to just go, most of us can't afford to just go crazy with our wallets and stuff, but the thing that people also don't understand is that companies like Walmart also really gouge the manufacturers. They gouge EA Games, they gouge mm-hmm. Hasbro, they really go to them and say, listen, we're not going to pay you as much for your product. We're not going to give you, you know, we're not going to give you as much money back on your product as Target or as GameStop or something is going to give you. Hmm. And there's nothing you can do about it. You have two choices. You can either take this lower percentage that we're going to pay you for stocking your product.
Or we won't carry your shit.
Or we won't carry your stuff. And no company is going to tell them no, right? Because it's Walmart. And just even from a marketing standpoint, from a perception standpoint, if your item, if you make a new game, like, yes, the new Star Wars game, and well, it's just not carried at Walmart, oh my God, you're mm-hmm. you're screwed. It's better to take the hit and make less money on the sales and presence we'll have at Walmart than to not be there at all. Yeah. So that's the other reason why Walmart charges so much less for everything, because they're actually paying the companies that manufacture them less than these other companies are. That's, and people say, you know, they sit there and go, oh, well, you know, fuck Target and fuck these other places. They're charging so much. They're trying to gouge us. Not at all. Target and them are not making any more profit on those items than Walmart is. In fact, Walmart is probably making more profit
for sure on it
because they're paying so much less than these other stores, because these other companies don't have that kind of clout. You know, if Meijer goes to EA Games or some company like that and says, well, we're going to pay you way, way less, or we just won't stock it, that game company might go, you know what? You're more of a regional company anyway. We'll take our chances. But we're Walmart, not going to take
not Walmart,
but not Walmart. Walmart
fucking you, everywhere.
You cannot not be in Walmart mm-hmm. if you want to be taken seriously as a manufacturer. So, and Walmart knows that. So they screw over a lot of companies. I mean, I'm not saying this is like an anti-Walmart rhetoric or anything. I shop there all the time. Yeah. But I'm just, it's just a fact. It's not an opinion. This is just a fact. That's how they do business. And manufacturers have been bitching about this for years now, but there's nothing they can do about it.
I worked at a GameStop for many, many years, unfortunately, but we won't go there. But I know how much they paid for each game. I know how much of a low margin there was, you know?
For profit, yeah.
Yeah, the profits for those stores are the used sales. Because if you come in there and buy a new game, the expectation for GameStop, which is why they're sort of failing now, is for, I finished with the game, I'm going to sell it back. And they can – then GameStop will buy it for a fucking really low price and then resell it for a high price. And that's where they make their profit. But people aren't really doing that anymore.
No, not as much.
A lot of it, the digital sales are really hurting them because people are just not buying new games and trading them in.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. With so many people just downloading, you know, doing the digital games and stuff, they're losing on that resale. Yeah. And yeah, like I said, it's just unfortunate because once I found out that was the way Walmart was doing business, there have been plenty of times where I have gone and paid a little more for a product at a different store just because I'm like, you know, I want this product to succeed. I want this company to succeed. I'll pay $5 or $10 more for it if I get it at a GameStop or at even a Target or a Meijer or somewhere else. I'll pay a little bit more for it than going to Walmart because I don't know. I've been there. I've been on all different sides of this spectrum, so I know how much it hurts, you know, to be gouged that way, you know. Well, so
this has been the Business Report on Metal Geeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, I think, you know, a lot of the people that listen to this, I know, are like me, you know, they're collectors.
Yeah, for sure.
And everything. I'm not saying don't buy from Walmart. I mean, hey man, if you really want something and you can get it from Walmart and it's in your wheelhouse of your budget, absolutely do it. It's better to buy it than not buy it at all. But I'm just saying, just understand before you go and quickly dismiss like those smaller stores, you know, and everything, or the collectible stores, you know, or your local comic book store.
Yeah,
well,
for sure.
local comic book store is trying to charge me, you know, $25 for a Black Series figure, but they've got them on sale for $16.99 at Walmart. Well, there's a reason for that, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you go and just automatically diss the comic book store for that, you know, you're not only hurting the people out there that are more like you, that are just trying to make a living out of this awesome hobby, but you're also technically hurting the hobby itself and the manufacturer, because Hasbro is making pennies on that when stores like Walmart do that. And then people get upset because they go, oh man, they were supposed to make a Millennium Falcon for the Black Series figures and they canceled it. And that sucks. It's like, well, it's because they know they're not going to make enough money on it.
And go to your local comic book shop, because become friends with them too, because most likely they'll be able to order that shit or pre-order that shit for you. You don't have to worry about trying to find it.
And
just get it for you.
And speaking as a former shop owner, man, if you're loyal, if you come and you're like, hey man, I'll buy my stuff from you rather than the giant, you know, box store or whatever, the mall store, like, we will cut you all sorts of other deals, man. Like, you know, yeah, you'll get stuff that it's like, you'll never get a chance. So, you know, like, yeah, variants and exclusives and stuff, man. Yeah. If you're the dude that comes into my shop and you always buy those cases of new Black Series figures from me, even though you're paying $5 more a figure or whatever, hey, when they come out with those exclusive variants that are like impossible to get, and I know you're the loyal dude, I'm going to put that aside from you. It pays dividends, man. And like I said, and it's just, it's what helps when the stores that are more toy centric or collector centric, like Toys R Us and KB, go extinct, and then gradually all the independent collector stores, comic stores, and all that are going extinct. I mean, what do people think that does for the hobby as a whole? It's not good, man.
Right.
It's not good. But anyway. So, yep, that's one to grow on.
The more you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen any movies recently?
Yeah, several. Of course, I went and saw New Terminator, Dark Fate.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we've
talked about it on the show a little bit. One of my co-hosts hadn't seen it yet, but I would love to talk about this movie.
All right. Well, you kind of already know what I think
of
it. I'm curious to know what you thought of it.
I really loved it.
See, and yeah, me too, man. And before people that are going to roll their eyes or something at home because there's so much negativity towards this movie, I am not a mark for Terminator. I'm not Vito. My partner in crime.
That's true.
Vito,
he is.
He is. You know, if it's Terminator, he may not even. He may not necessarily love it, but he's going to watch it.
Like, he's read the books, not the books, like screenplay books, but he's read books about the Terminator universe.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's He's their wheelhouse right there.
Yeah. His favorite movie of all time is Terminator 2: Judgment Day. Mm-hmm. So. You know, that's it. Not even like his favorite action or favorite sci-fi. No, his favorite movie of all time is T2. So, you know, he might have a more somewhat biased opinion or something, but I'm not that way. I like Terminator, but I'm not a mark for it. So I went into this, honest to God, expecting it to possibly blow.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did it not blow, it was entertaining as hell, man.
It was just a fun Terminator story. It was a fun movie. Not just a Terminator movie, but, I mean, people can say, oh, well, the CGI here wasn't good, blah, blah, blah. Who cares?
Man, I've seen much worse CGI.
So have I. And I read that in a review. I'm like, I didn't even see that. I was just having fun.
Right, exactly. I thought it was fun, and I'm really, we talked about this before, I'm really getting tired of people's, you know, people sit there and they talk about they're sick of the political agendas of Hollywood, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. I'm not going to say, I'm neither here nor there on that, but what people fail to understand, though, is that just as much as maybe they think that the political agenda of Hollywood is a bad thing, people's anti-political agenda has gotten just as bad, if not worse, in that people are automatically turning their nose up at things just because they're sniffing out some perceived political agenda. You know, if a movie comes out that's like a reboot or an action movie and it stars all females, or it stars more minorities or what have you, or transgender people or something, people automatically are going, oh, fuck this. Oh, fucking Hollywood cramming this down our throats, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, did you give the movie a chance? Did you give the TV show a chance? Did you really give it a fair chance? Because ultimately,
did you even watch it?
Right. Ultimately, who gives a shit if it's good? Just give it I don't care. You know, I saw the remake of Ghostbusters with the all-female cast. I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it either.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Exactly.
I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But my criticisms of it were not based on because it was female. Mm. I don't care. I'm all for it being female. You know, like, I don't care if they're going to redo Charlie's Angels and they're going to put more minorities in there and recast certain roles with more female roles. Great. Cool. I'm fine with that. Who cares? Well, it's this agenda.
Charlie's Angels has always had main cast with female.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I all this stuff, I'm so tired of people doing it. People ruined Solo because they had their anti-Hollywood agendas. And it's all these anti things.
Fandom has gotten really toxic.
Yes, precisely. Toxic's a good word for it.
And a lot of it, I hate to say it, we part of our livelihood is done on this forum, on this place, but a lot of it has to do with the internet, because everybody has a place to tell their opinion, and the internet, it is like high school again. Everybody's trying to fit in, and some people will spout toxicity just to try to fit in. Oh yeah, I hated that too. That was stupid. And a lot of the people probably don't even mean it, but a lot of people do. Don't get me wrong. I know people.
I mean, I'm going back to when Solo came out, and I mean, I'm not saying it was perfect. It wasn't a perfect movie. I had criticisms of it, but overall, I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was fun. We got to see the Kessel Run.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was cool stuff in there.
It might not have been when you envisioned it to be, but it was there.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, it was things that were different, but I really enjoyed it overall. That movie got just bombed. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they just threw everything they could at it. And what was ironic to me about it was in the months or weeks after that, there was people that I saw had really negative attitudes towards it. And then I saw them talking about it. And then they said, well, actually, I still haven't even seen it yet, but I know that it's shit. And I'm going,
yeah, I read somebody mention something about it being bad. Like, make up in your own opinion.
And unfortunately, I saw even worse than that is I still, like on Facebook and other places, I still see people. I just saw a friend of mine post the other day, said, I finally watched Solo and I really liked it. I don't understand why everybody hated it. Hmm. And I'm like, well, see, that's the problem is I know a lot, in as much as I knew people that bombed it without even seeing it.
Yeah.
I also know a lot of people who didn't go see it and didn't give it a chance because mm-hmm. it had so much negative press and everything. And that's the worst thing. It's like, I think people need to stop letting themselves be so swayed by, you know, well, I saw people were saying it's got a 15% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Fuck Rotten Tomatoes. Who cares?
That's a lot of that is ruining. Okay, that's a great point because it only got 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. It only got a 4.5 score. A lot of that video game stuff is the same way. The way I look at a game, if I want to play it, I'll go. There's a couple of YouTube channels, and I can't remember what they're called right now, but they don't really review games. They talk about every aspect. They talk about the graphics and they talk about the game style and the gameplay and this kind of stuff, but they don't give a number review to anything. They said, hey, this is what I liked about it. This is what I didn't like about it. You might like this more than me. And it's just an overview of what the game is like. And that's a better thing than a numbered review to me because reviews are just opinions.
Eggs and that, Carrie, you hit a raw nerve with me with that because that has always been my biggest gripe. People think that because I'm a musician and because mm-hmm. I've got this band, people think that we're just, oh, well, you guys are crybabies because somebody didn't like your record when there's a negative review. And it's like, absolutely not. I totally respect everybody's opinion, mm-hmm. right or wrong. But my problem with reviews, with the whole concept behind critics and criticism and critiques and stuff, is that I don't give a shit about your personal tastes. I don't give a shit about what you think is a good genre or a bad genre or a good vocalist or a bad vocalist or a good game or a bad game or a good CG or bad. What I want is I just want details. Like, give me details. Here's what this album or this game or this movie is about. Here's what it encapsulates. It's mm-hmm. this long. It's got, you know, the graphics were done by this company. It was developed by this person. It was, you know, songs were written by this, blah, 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 blah.
Game style is comparable to this. If you enjoyed this game, you might enjoy this.
Right. And that's like I said before, you know, people think we get upset when people compare our bands. Well, these guys remind me of Opeth. I have no problem with that. Of course we remind you of Opeth. We have the same influences. But mm-hmm. it's when people sit there and say, well, this band sucks because they're just trying to be Opeth. Well, no, we're not. Like I said, we're as old or older than Opeth. We have the same influences. That's when I get upset is that when people try to tell you things, you know, when they're trying to sway you. I don't want to be swayed. I don't care about being swayed. Just give me the basic info because I know what I like, what I generally tend to like, and what I don't like. And give me the basic rundown of this so I can glean myself of whether it's something worth playing. Like, if you tell me a game was designed by such and such studio And I know that historically, mm-hmm. I really like the games I've played by that studio, from that studio and everything. And if you sit there and say, you know, yeah, it's keeping up with their, you know, they put it out. It was designed by this guy, blah, 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 blah. Everything, it's, you know, the graphics, and it works with this. It does that. It, you know, show me, like, maybe even some, like you said, do a little bit of gameplay. Show me some example of how it looks and how it plays. And I will glean my own opinion of whether or not that's worth my $40 or $50. I don't need you sitting there going, this game is so fucking stupid. Yeah. And oh my, I was so bored playing this game. And I don't understand why anybody would like, fuck you. I don't give a shit. Some of my favorite movies, comics, games, albums, music albums, everything are stuff that historically a lot of people hated.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need your precious opinion on it. I just need info, because I'm real curious, like, how does it look?
How does it play? You know,
how's the play? How does it sound? Is it, you know, what's on the soundtrack? Oh, it's got this on the soundtrack. You know, all these kind of things. You know, who designed it? All that kind of stuff. I just, give me that. And that, man, I'll support you all day long if you give me that stuff.
Like the new Star Wars game, I'm playing through right now, so it's very fresh in my mind. Okay, so it's developed by Respawn Entertainment, who I know them, even though it's published by EA. Whatever you feel about EA, but if the review that I watched, not the review, but the video that I watched, they're like, if you like exploration like the new Tomb Raider games, and you like the game style of like Dark Souls, but being able to wield a lightsaber and being set in the Star Wars universe, you will probably like this game. And that's what did it for me, you know?
Right.
Right. It wasn't like, oh, I would give the gameplay only a 5 because I didn't like Dark Souls. I'm like, well, that's not the point of the review. It's if I like Dark Souls and I know what you mean by it plays like that game, if I don't like Dark Souls, I might not enjoy this game as well.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And that's all I need. I don't, people get into these deep seated reviews, critiques where they start mm-hmm. talking about how, you know, they don't like this because of this, and they don't like, you know, there's too many females in it for them or whatever all these kind of things, or they start bringing up about, well, you know, Hollywood's trying to jam this down our throat. Just shut up about that. I don't care. I don't want to hear about anybody's agenda or their anti-agenda. Just give me the basics. You know, show me a clip, show me stills, show me, you know, like
show
I said,
me, show me the money.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's same thing with like musical gear, you know, obviously being a musician and stuff. And, you know, I endorse some gear out there and all that kind of stuff. And I don't feel the need to sit there and tell people, well, this guitar pedal or this guitar or this amplifier is better than this other one because of this and blah, blah, blah. You know, I just, you know, lay it out with basic facts. Like here's what this guitar pedal does. You know, it's got these kind of pots in it and it gives you this much gain boost and it does this. And if you play these kinds of music, it's going to be tailored towards that because it'll give you the gain you need for it, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But, you know,
detail.
You see some of these where these, yeah, you see these guys, you know, putting out these like, oh, well, you know, this pedal is garbage and blah, 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 and this and that. And, you know, and I don't like this brand. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't care about that. I don't really care about what any of these people on Rotten Tomatoes or anything like or don't like. You know, if I'm talking to a friend like you or somebody else, I might listen to what did you think of it? Okay, well, oh, you didn't like it? Well, tell me why. And that's the other thing, too, is because most of the time when these people say that they don't like stuff, I listen to their so-called explanations, and I'm like, that's not a very good explanation. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not well-spoken enough, I guess, or unbiased enough to really give me an explanation that makes me think twice.
So going back to movies real quick, you saw Dr. Sleep, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we can talk about that because...
Oh, I'd love to.
I was blown away by the 1.5 times I saw that movie.
1.5?
Yeah, well, I think you saw my Facebook story.
The
first time we were watching, about 45 minutes into the movie, alarms started going off. We're like, what the fuck is going on? And it turns out there was a popcorn fire in the theater. like in the back, you know, where they're.
Oh, jeez.
So as soon as we walked out, we didn't know what the hell's going on. And my friends that I were with, one of them's like, hey, why don't we go out the back door, not through the front, just in case there is something bad going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
But we wound up going through the front of the theater, and as soon as you walked out there, you could smell. You never burnt like microwave popcorn at home. Amplify that like by 1,000. That's what it smelled like.
Oof. So, wow. Somebody got fired.
Yeah. I saw one of the managers yelling at the people going, do not sell anymore. Stop selling. This is it. Stop. So we all went outside. We waited a little while. We're like, what's going on? Luckily, they called the local theater that was nearby. Well, all the little, there was AMC. So all the local theater that were nearby enough. So all we had to do was go over there and say, hey, here's my stub. Give me another showing. And that's what we did. We just went to the next showing. We watched the whole thing over again.
That's awesome.
I'll admit here, I have not seen The Shining since I was a kid.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. I remember a lot of about it, but I don't remember every little detail or anything like that. I borrowed it from my co-host, but I haven't had a chance to really watch it yet. The Blu-ray, but I had such a good time watching this movie. It was everything I wanted a Stephen King movie to be. It was smart. It was there was enough, not really jump scares, but enough scares in it. It had a little bit of a supernatural element to it as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I really enjoyed Dr. Sleep, and it did not do well enough. I don't think. I don't know if it's because they didn't advertise it as a, hey, it's a sequel to The Shining, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I think that's part of it. I think the marketing was very mild. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't really market it as much as I would expect. I was really surprised because we went and saw it on opening night.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually, traditionally, I mean, it's a Stephen King movie. It's a Ewan McGregor movie. Mm-hmm. It's a sequel to The Shining. You'd think on like an opening weekend thing, it'd be crowded and there'd be a lot of showings, you know, usually there's like a considerable, it's showing on every hour or every hour and a half or whatever. I think at our theater, it was showing maybe 3 or 4 times a day. That's it.
Wow.
I think it was too
for us. Cause trying to get that next schedule, we're like, we have to wait 2 hours now, you know, what are we going to do?
Right. Yeah, it was very limited. And then I went and saw it again a few days later at a different theater. And it was even more limited. It was they were barely showing it. So I don't think theaters really invested too heavily in it either.
Maybe they didn't know either.
I think that there just wasn't a lot of excitement about it.
Yeah.
It's a shame. I know there was a lot of trepidation from fans because the problem is the Shining books series, meaning The Shining and Dr. Sleep, were very different from the Kubrick film.
Right.
And so
that's what I've heard.
Right. And so I think a lot of people had some reservations about, well, what are they doing with the movie? Because obviously if it's a movie, you think it's going to be a sequel to the Kubrick film. Mm-hmm. However, the Dr. Sleep book is not a sequel to the Kubrick film. Like there's some major differences.
And this movie is the movie version of the book, not a movie version of the Shining sequel.
Well, I think that they did a really good job of melding the two because there is obviously, I mean, you saw the movie, there is obviously reference to the Kubrick film, plenty, especially in the last quarter of the film. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, totally referential to Kubrick's film, but they still kept it a little bit more close to the Dr. Sleep novel and the Shining novel. I mean, I don't see how they could have done a better job making a sequel to two separate sources than they did. I really thought, because I was really nervous going into this, going, man, you know, if they make it too much of a sequel to Kubrick's film, they're going to leave out some very important things from the book. And if they make it too much of a sequel to the book, man, we're going to miss out on a lot of the things that were great about the Kubrick film. And I thought that with only a couple of exceptions, man, they did a great job with melding the two into a story that could be a sequel for both. I don't really know. It was well acted. It was well written. I liked the effects in it. I never got taken out of it. Man, I mean, I don't know how spoilery we want to get, although
we get spoilery. It's okay. It's been out a couple weeks now.
Man, that scene with the little boy in Iowa when they kill him and they take his essence and everything, and they take his shine and all that. That's brutal. Like, man, that was just because that wasn't even like horror. I don't know. That was just literally like true crime-ish, you know what I mean? Like, you think about that shit happens. I don't like seeing kids get tortured and murdered. It's hard to watch. Yeah. And I mean, but it was true to the book, and man, it was really amazing the way they did that. I don't think they could have cast this movie any better. What they did with Shelley Duvall and Jack Nicholson's stand-ins, so to speak, you know,
right.
Like, holy shit.
I'm surprised. What a great job. I was just waiting for them to do that digital overlay of their faces, but I'm glad they didn't do that.
No, they didn't. And that would have taken me out of it a little bit, I think. I mean, even if they might have done a good job. I mean, I thought they did a pretty good, you know, a lot of people complained about that with Rogue One, you know, when they did that in there with Carrie Fisher and what's his nuts, Tarkin and stuff, Cushing. But
that's his official title. What's his nuts?
What's his nuts, Tarkin?
Yeah. Not Grand Moff anymore.
He's not Grand Moff. Now he's just what's his nuts, Tarkin. but anyway, I thought that they put it across, like, I didn't get taken out of it. I was worried that I'd get so, you know, because you're so, those actors and those roles are so iconic.
Yes.
That I was like, you know, trying to put stand-ins in there is going to take me out of the experience. It didn't. And like, who would have ever thought, would you have thought, you know, 35 or whatever, 37 years ago, would you have pictured that someday Henry Thomas would be playing Jack Torrance in a sequel to The Shining? Because that was Elliot from E.T.
Wait, what? Really?
That was Henry Thomas.
I didn't even realize that.
That was playing the Jack Nicholson
role. The bartender role.
Yes, playing Jack
Torrance. Holy crap. I'm going to have to rewatch that now.
Yeah, that was him. What a great job. Yeah, because a lot of that cast, a lot of people from the True Knot and stuff, and that are from the Haunting of Hill House series on Netflix.
Okay,
because it's the same director, so he brought a lot of the same actors over to work on Dr. Sleep and everything. And Henry Thomas is in that as well. So he plays the father in that show, which is actually, that's a great show. Have you watched that?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it, man. I mean,
another doing another season of it, but it's going to be a completely different story.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'm fine with that. Yeah. You know, I thought it ended the way it should end and everything, so I'm cool with that. That's such the thing now, you know. I feel like American Horror Story and stuff kind of started that precedent with it, which has been hit or miss.
I started watching 1984. I haven't completed it, though. I maybe watched the first two episodes.
Have not watched it yet.
Yeah. I haven't really been a big American Horror Story fan. I've never, not that I don't like it, I just never really watched much of it.
I've watched almost all of it. You know, I'm not a big horror fan. So I'm super, the horror that I like, but I'm really, really picky about it. And I'm not, because I'm not generally much into gratuitous violence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, me horror, either. You know. And everything.
I don't like torture porn movies and all that.
No, I don't like torture. I don't like a lot of blood and guts. It's just never been my thing. I don't get it. I don't see the appeal in it. I do like being scared, though. Mm-hmm. I do like being spooked. I like being startled. I like mysteries. I like the supernatural, the unknown. Mm-hmm. So I do like that, and I can tolerate some violence and gore and things to a point, but there's times in American Horror Story where it just gets gratuitous and sad, you know, but there's times that I really, there's times when that show wants to be brilliant, it can be brilliant. But other times I'm just like, ah, you lost me, you know, like I like the story. I like you where you were going with some of the mystery of these characters. And then it just seems like, well, let's just be shocking. And I'm like, oh, fucking anybody can be shocking, you know, come up with a story that really pulls me in.
So, have you had a chance to check out Disney Plus yet?
A little bit. Yes, a little bit. I haven't checked out too much. You're going to laugh at me. So
No.
Of all the new cons, so, you know, I get Disney Plus. Uh-huh. What was that? On the 12th or 13th or whatever it was.
I have a story about that we can talk about too.
But. Okay. I get Disney Plus, I log into it, and, you know, there's all these things on there. There's The Mandalorian, there's all this content, all these, you know, all the Disney movies, basically, just about.
What was the first thing you watched?
The first thing I watched was the 5-minute short with Forky.
Oh, really? I watched that too, the first one.
About money or whatever.
Yeah, what's my money or whatever it was.
Because, dude, I know Toy Story 4 was hit or miss for a lot of people, and there were things about it that I was like, okay.
I'm on that page.
I had mixed opinions about that movie, too. But, man, I fucking love Forky. Forky just cracks me the fuck up. It's my, I don't know, just when he comes, every time Forky comes to a realization, when something finally gets into his Forky head.
Isn't that Tony Hill from Arrested Development, right?
I think so, yeah. And when he gets that like realization face and those little bristle brush arms just drop down. I don't know, man. I'm a simple guy, man. That just makes me laugh. And I saw that and I was just like, okay, yeah, I need more Forky in my life. So that was the first thing I watched. And then I went back and then of course, because everybody was talking about it, I had to watch the Greedo scene.
I haven't watched that yet. I need to.
Oh my gosh.
Good, bad, indifferent.
McClunky.
Yeah. God. Yeah.
McClunky.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Dude. Yeah. I just got done saying I don't believe in influencing anybody's opinions and I don't, you know, but speaking for myself, I don't get it.
Stop changing that scene.
I don't understand what was the point. You know, like, even though I disagreed with the Greedo shot first thing, I disagreed with all that, I at least understood what their point was. Mm-hmm. I understood what they explained it. Well, we did this because we feel that Han would not shoot first, blah, 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 blah. I didn't agree with that. Because I think, unlike Han Solo, was not supposed to be some Boy Scout, you know. So anyway, but I understood their point. I understood with the different, and then they went and made it. So, well, they both shot at the same time and Greedo missed. Okay.
So
all
Greedo's
right.
A stormtrooper, I guess, right?
Right. I'm like, okay, I guess I kind of get it. But this McClunky thing, I was like, what is the point of this? This is, and it wait till you watch it.
Okay.
I can't wait to hear your opinion on it. But from my viewpoint, when I watched it, it looks and feels clunky. It is McClunky because it looks almost like something we would have made for one of our parody shorts that we do on Geeking Poetic. Like it doesn't even like look edited well. And,
oh no.
I'd like, what was the point of this?
So my quick story is, I did the D23, signed up for 3 years, got, you know, you pay for two and get one free, right?
Yes.
So that morning we both download the app. We're going to watch it and couldn't log in using my regular email, my regular password, not working. I'm like, okay, so maybe it's just overloaded right now. I'm going to go to work. Maybe I'll try it during lunch. Tried during lunch. Didn't work. Started getting on to their online chat to get help. 7 hours on chat, no help. Hours and hours and hours and hours waiting on hold with, okay, Disney, you have a wide variety of amazing Disney music you can pull from. Don't play the same 45-second clip over and over and over for hours. That's
right.
My thing about that. But then it was weird after I finally did talk to somebody, which was like, the second day of trying, maybe like 3.5 hours of waiting on hold, finally got my solution. I'm missing the music now, but that's a weird thing. So the problem was probably my fault, because when I typed in my email when I was signing up, I put a typo in the email.
Okay.
So it was my fault. I had one letter off. So after that, I was able to log in. No problems. But just getting to that initial help from them, they were so overwhelmed, and they were super nice about it. And, you know, and I know it wasn't their fault. He's like, yeah, we've had 10 million people sign up in the past day. We apologize for any delay of like helping you, but you know, I know it's going to happen. But the first thing I watched, I think, was during my I work out every day during my lunch break, and I watched Star Wars Resistance, the first episode.
Okay.
I got home. First thing I watched was Steamboat Willie.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, because I was waiting for my wife to get home, for Kim to get home to watch The Mandalorian. But my favorite thing on Disney Plus right now is The Imagineering Story. It's that docuseries.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
It is so if you're a Disney Parks nerd and an Imagineering nerd like I am, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. There's footage I've never seen on there. There's new interviews with people that have been involved, like Bob Gurr and Raleigh Crump. And it's just a well put together series. And it's directed by Leslie Iwerks, who is, you know who Ub Iwerks is, right? He was Disney's right hand man when they were first putting Disney together, the company together. Okay. It's his granddaughter.
Okay.
Or maybe even great granddaughter. I don't know, but she's the one directing these, and it's really, it's everything I wanted it to be as a Disney Parks nerd. And I recommend it for anybody to watch. I mean, it's on there. I mean, we watched part of one this morning. They talk about bringing Michael Eisner in and how they got Star Wars and Star Tours involved in Disneyland and all this kind of stuff. And it's just amazing stuff.
Yeah, I gotta admit. I mean, I love the Disney parks, but I'm not like that well versed in them. I haven't been to Disney World since 1993.
Oh, don't say that. That hurts.
Yeah, I haven't been to. You know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you gotta understand. It's like when I get vacation time and stuff, it goes towards the band. You know. Right. I mean, that's why the only times I've ever been to Disneyland is when I'm out in California doing stuff at the NAMM, the National Association of Music Merchants or whatever.
Because NAMM isn't it at the
literally down the block.
Yeah, you can walk there.
Yeah, it's the Anaheim Convention Center. It's right down the block. Yeah, I'll be there again this January, and I'm staying at a hotel that's like right on Disney Way or Disney Walk or whatever that is there.
You got to go to Galaxy's Edge, man.
Yeah.
No matter what you do.
You know, I'm tempted. I may go pop in there, but you know, it's just kind of bummer going all by yourself. I need to, like, if I had time, I need to like see if I could drag Vito over there, you know, cause he's going with me to NAMM and everything. You know, last January I got snowed in, technically, or snowed out rather, of Chicago. I was done at NAMM, ready to come home.
Yeah.
And then they notified me that all flights were canceled.
Oh no.
And all flights were canceled for like almost a week.
Whoa.
So I got stuck out in California, which sucked, but it wasn't too terrible. You know,
there's worse places to be stuck.
Well, because at home, the reason why I was snowed out of Chicago is because it was in, like, -0 temperatures.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we had, like, a terrible cold snap last January where it got down to, like, -40 at one point.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, and so there was no flights or anything coming in and out of there, obviously. Meanwhile, I'm in Southern California where it was like 68, 69 degrees. So I was like, well, it sucked because, you know, the money I made, you know, working that prior week there, you know, at NAMM and everything, the money I made was getting spent on staying out there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And everything. But, you know, if you're going to get snowed out or snowed in somewhere, you know, it could be worse. So I ended up like going and I walked around downtown Disney there and mm-hmm. like went and ate and, you know, they had bowling and all sorts of shit there. And, you know, and I've been to Disneyland there before and stuff. It's great. Yeah. I really want to check out Galaxy's Edge. Needless to say, being a Star Wars nerd, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to probably try to plan like maybe a long weekend sometime next year, maybe. We're not sure if we're going to go back to Florida or California. We're going to try to book it around the same time if we go on a cruise or something like that. So it's gotcha. Like kill two birds with one stone. Because that's my wife's idea of a vacation, the cruise. And mine's walking around Disney. So make us both happy.
Yeah, you guys ever going to consider going on the metal cruise?
I would love to, but it's so close to my event at work. Oh, I'm not able to take any time off of that during that time. I would love to. I know you guys played it before.
Yeah. We played Barge to Hell 1 year and then we played 70,000 Tons of Metal twice. So we've been on the cruise 3 times and we'll see if we do 4.
Wow. Oh, you
never know.
That'd be cool. I would love to do that. I mean, cause I know it's such a small, place that I know a lot of the band are accessible to people. They're meeting people and hanging out at bars and shit.
Very much so. Yeah, and this year there's like some really cool bands on there. Man, Michael Schenker is going to be on this year.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, again, I'm old metal dude, you know, like, and he's doing the, Michael Schenker's doing the fest thing where he's got Graham Bonnet and Doogie White and all that. I'm like, oh, dude, like, I'm... Yeah, so I don't know if we're going to do the cruise this year. You never know with the cruise. They wait till the last freaking minute, you know, to confirm that kind of stuff. But I will definitely be interested in seeing them. So there's some other good acts on there this year. So
it's always been a dream of mine to do that because I don't like huge outdoor festivals just because I don't like being around that many people, which is weird. I don't like being around in large crowds, but I love going to like Disney and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like thinking about going to like Vulcan or someplace like that just makes me nervous because it's just so huge, you know?
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think it depends on what you go to. And I know we've talked about it a little bit before, but honestly, the vibe and the atmosphere of the European metal festivals is so different than going to like, say, you know, if you go to Lollapalooza here or Riot Fest or even Ozfest or something like that.
I've done Ozfest a few times and it was just,
it's a different atmosphere out there, man. It's so much more chill. Like everybody's, you know, there's never violence. There's never,
right.
It's like people are really friendly. It's really communal. And I'm with you, dude. I don't like people. So I don't want to be around them any more than I have to be. But I find myself really enjoying myself when we play the European festivals. I like to go walk around there and, you know, hang out in all the merch areas and just, you know, get food and like meet people, talk to them and stand out there with them while Maiden or, you know, Sabbath or somebody's playing. Like, yeah, it's a different experience. I would say if you ever do decide, you know, because it really is, especially for you guys, because you guys love metal, you love music, you like to experience things. I do think that some point before you die, you should go to Europe and experience at least one of the metal festivals. Just be careful. Like, I don't know if I would say, especially for somebody who's wary of big crowds and stuff, I wouldn't say to pop your cherry by going to Vulcan. You know what I mean?
I had a buddy who actually went last year. He just took off and went to Vulcan. I'm like, holy crap, dude.
Yeah. And I mean, you might love it, but I can, you know, but I'm just saying if there was something you wanted to go do that you were maybe a little more, you know, wanted to be like, maybe not something quite that level, you know, go to a festival like Brutal Assault in Prague, you know, go to a festival like Grass Pop in Belgium, which, you know, I mean, that's a big, you know, that's, you're talking 60,000 people, but it's still not, I don't know. It's like, it feels massive, but then it doesn't. I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's big, but it's just got such a cool atmosphere, and people love to meet other people there, you know, from other countries. If you guys went, and you would end up like talking to people, meeting people, and they're very friendly, and you know, but you could still go kind of have your own space too, you know. It's not, it doesn't have that kind of tense, like being at a outdoor Ozfest in San Antonio or Houston or something, and there's like 18,000 people there, and you're all kind of sausaged in, and people are drunk and banging into each other, and this guy's getting into a fight.
Because I did the like Milwaukee Metal Fest for years, and like we had the San Antonio Metal Fest done by the same guy. I went to New Jersey for it back when I was really promoting my fanzine back in the day, and I had no problems with those shows.
Yeah. So, and Milwaukee Metal Fest was a different beast, you know, than going to something like Grass Pop. But, I would just say, because I'm the same way, you know, like I live here in Chicago and we have a lot of big outdoor festivals here. They have Lollapalooza every year, which draws tens of thousands of people. They have Riot Fest, which draws tens of thousands of people. They have, you know, there's all sorts of stuff in this area. And I went to Riot Fest to go see the Misfits the one year, a couple years ago, because I had to see the Misfits once in my life.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know, because all-time favorites. But even though they're kind of right in my backyard, I don't go. I don't go to those because it's just too chaotic. It's too much. There's too much of everything. Everything is just on 12, you know. But it isn't that way when I go to the European fests. So take that for what it's worth.
Cool. Well, the cool thing about the cruise that sort of we like cruising. So if I get annoyed or I want to go take a nap, I can just go down to my cabin. I'm done. You don't have to travel far, and it's all right there. Which I think that would probably appeal to me the most.
Yeah, and that's how the metal cruise is too. I mean, it's fun, you know, because you can get away if you want to. Mm-hmm. And then there's all the different restaurants. There's the casino. You know, I like the casino, unfortunately. Okay. I like to go to the casino sometimes. and they have things. They have the lounges. They have, you know, big thing on the metal cruise is they do the karaoke.
I was about to say, I want to see metal karaoke. I always see like all the people from different bands just hanging out and just doing weird songs.
Oh yeah. I've seen everything. I mean, I've gotten up and done karaoke myself and one year I was up there singing, In a Big Country by Big Country. I was singing that with the guys from Carcass. We're sitting there like right in front of me, like singing along and being goofy. And, you know, I've seen, Russell Allen sing Journey covers and Foreigner songs. I've seen what's his face from Fear Factory.
Burton.
Burton, yes. Yeah. Burton. I've seen Burton get up and sing like sing like B-52 songs.
Nice.
and all that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And it is, a chance for people to like mingle and, you know, meet the bands they like. Some of the bands are not as fan friendly as others, but a lot of them are like real cool, you know, and love to hang out. Definitely a good opportunity to get things signed. Good opportunity to get photos, all that kind of stuff, you know? So
you're just selling me more, man.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. You should do it someday.
I definitely plan to. It just got to get it working in my schedule. So if they announce November's Doom again, that might happen. We'll have to see.
Yeah, you never know.
So I know besides being in November's Doom, you do a lot of other shows, different style bands up in Chicago area. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people in metal, I guess a lot of genres tend to be this way, but metal in particular, I mean, people get a little uppity if you're not just devout metal all the time and everything. That's never been me. I mean, I guess maybe I went through a phase when I was a teenager where I was just uber metal, you know, all the time. But
I,
because it's one of the things we bond on. I mean, I grew up on the Monkees and the Beatles and all sorts of other stuff, and 80s new wave and 70s soft rock and yacht rock and all that. I love all that stuff. So as much as I love playing with November's Doom, I have to have other outlets or I go crazy. Plus, the truth of the matter is like we talked about in the other show, is that, you know, November's Doom is not the kind of thing that I make a full living off of. We make money. There's money that gets made, but not very much, you know. And I made a decision at a very young age that this was how I really wanted to live my life, you know. I mean, I work and have worked normal jobs, so to speak, but I always make music number one. It has to be number one in my life. It's over everything. It's just the way it is, you know, for better or worse, right or wrong. And so I go out and I play in other bands. I've got, you know, I'm in a band that's like a female fronted band that does a lot of like 80s stuff and even like disco-y stuff and all that stuff. I play in a band that does that called Ex-Girlfriend. I play in another band called Underground Prophets where we do a lot of like 80s and 90s one-hit wonder type stuff. And we play everything from like the Smithereens and Social Distortion to, you know, like Wang Chung and the Romantics and In Excess, you know, a lot of like that kind of stuff. I play bass and sing in that band. I go out and do a lot of like solo acoustic stuff. I play with an acoustic quartet called Acoustically Speaking. And in that we do, man, just about everything under the sun, you know, from like Simon and Garfunkel to Tesla, you know what I mean? Like, you know, anything we can do with an acoustic guitar. I just need to do that. I love playing music and I, you know, being honest with you, I like getting paid to do it too. So that is where the money is at in a lot of respects. But even if it wasn't, I think I'd still do it because in as much as I love doom metal and I love death metal and all that kind of stuff, like I love getting up and singing like a Beatles song or singing a Pink Floyd song or an In Excess song or things like that. I enjoy music so much. You know, in November's Doom, I'm never going to have an excuse to get up and play Papa Jean's Blues by the Monkees, you know. But if I
would be there.
I know you would, but you would admittedly be in the minority.
Yeah,
you know,
I probably would.
But, you know, if I go out and I just book like a little pub or something like that or a coffee house or whatever, I can go book a solo acoustic show. I go play for 3 or 4 hours. I sing. I play songs. I get, you know, I go, hey, you know what? Tonight I feel like playing stuff by Queen. You know, I'll get up and play some like album tracks from Night at the Opera by Queen that like most people don't even know. But I get, you know, I enjoy it. I play it well. I think I play it well. People tell me I play it well and they enjoy it. It's, you know, I like doing that. And then I do that. And then I'm all ready and raring to go to put on the downtuned baritone guitar and my black leather jacket and, you know, windmill my hair and play a bunch of doom death metal and stuff on the next November's Doom tour or show. It just keeps me balanced, man.
I would definitely be at a lot of those shows just making you play Michael Nesmith stuff the whole time.
Yeah, I've played especially, you know, I only really get to do that at my solo shows. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I've played a bunch of stuff. I've played Papa Jean's Blues. That's one of my favorites. I've played Nine Times Blue. Mm. I've played Circle Sky. And then I've done, you know, some of the other more mainstream Monkey stuff. I've done like, I've done Pleasant Valley Sunday. I've done, gosh, what else have I played? Daydream Believer. Everybody always wants to hear Daydream
yeah.
Believer.
One of my, not one of my least favorite songs, but you know, it's one of those overplayed things, you know?
Really? See, I love that song. In terms of like the more mainstream stuff, that's one of the ones that, believe it or not, I've not gotten sick of. There's something about it's a musician thing. I love the way the harmonies come in, and they're it's such a great interval that they do. And people are gonna fall asleep on me now because I'm talking music nerd stuff. But I really love that song. I've done that on occasion with. Couple of my friends will do duets on Daydream Believer, and So I, from a musician standpoint, that it keeps that song very fresh and cool for me. You know, I could see from a listener standpoint, he gets sick of it. I feel that way about, like, you know, Last Train to Clarksville and,
I'm a Believer.
Yeah. And even, I mean, some of the other ones like Shades of Grey and stuff. Okay. It's like, oh, I've heard them so many times.
Yeah. You know? There's always that one song from a band that you love that you're just like, I'm over the song. For Anthrax, I have one of those, and it's not really one of their originals, but Antisocial. And just like, if they never play that song ever again live, I'd be okay.
As much as Anthrax is one of my favorites, I never cared for Antisocial that much. I don't mind.
I totally agree.
I never cared that much for that song. I mean, it's a cover anyway, you know.
Right. But yeah, I know they like doing, because it's like that anthemic, you know.
Yeah,
fist in the air saying.
It was a big hit of theirs. I mean, yeah. I get why they do it, but I just. That album, State of Euphoria, is not one of my go-to albums for them. Mm-hmm.
It's one of their least. They don't even like that album that much.
Right. I mean, that's not a bad album. There's good stuff on there. You know, for me, for Anthrax, my go-to album's probably Persistence.
Oh, me too. That's my number one album from them, really.
Yeah. I had front row for that tour when they were on Clash of the Titans.
I did. I was at that show. I was in front row, but I was at Clash of the Titans here in Houston.
I went to the one down in Springfield, Illinois. Mm. I had front row for that, and right in front of Scott Ian.
Wow.
And the sound coming from his guitars when he was playing Time and stuff was just like I said before, it made such an impression on me. I was like, that's my idea of the perfect heavy rhythm guitar sound for metal, like just that sound that he got.
Yeah,
like his, so
his wrist motion that he can do is just that chuggy stuff that he does. It's so amazing.
I do that a lot,
and I'm not a guitar player. I don't even know how to play guitar. I play Guitar Hero, and that's about it. But
I do that a lot. that is incorporated. You know, that and Hetfield, of course, are real. Big parts of my DNA.
My next favorite Anthrax album, it might be, you know, might be an unpopular opinion, but Sound of White Noise.
No, that would be mine.
Okay.
Yeah, number two was probably a tie between Sound of White Noise and
Among the Living.
Spreading the Disease.
Oh, well, okay. I can see that. It's definitely my top five.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, Spreading is the album I discovered them on.
Okay.
You know, back in 85, 86. So it's got that first album, you know, shine for me, because that was hearing AIR and stuff. I was like, holy cow, this is incredible. And in so many respects, it felt more impressive to me than even like Ride the Lightning did at the time, which was the current, you know, Metallica album. Although I loved Ride the Lightning, but
I was already a fan, and I remember, I mean, this memory just popped in my head, sitting in the back seat with my best friend, my parents' station wagon facing outward. You know, they had that back row listening to Z-Rock, and they were like, they kept on promoting, hey, we're gonna play a new Anthrax song, we're gonna play something from Persistence of Time, it's coming up. And it was Got the Time, and it was like the most magical thing to me. I'm like, got to hear the song early. And it was like, it blew my little, you know, 13-year-old mind.
Yeah, I'm the same way, man. I remember, oh man, I miss Z-Rock.
Yeah, me too.
I remember that was how it was with me, although I already liked Slayer, but that's how it was with me when Rain and Blood was coming out. I remember I was in my mom's van after school one day. She had picked me up from school. I was freshman in high school, and I was sitting in the van while she ran into the store or something like that before heading home, and they announced, they're like, we're going to preview, because it wasn't out yet, the new Slayer album, Rain and Blood, and it had just come out like that day or the day before, and they're like, we're going to play for you the first track we're playing, and they played Reborn of all songs.
Wow.
And I was so incredibly blown away by it that I made her take me to the record store. I was like, before we go home, please take me to the record store so I can go buy this. And I bought that and Metal Church, The Dark.
Oh,
on the same
day. Perfect. That album does not get enough recognition, I think.
The Dark?
Yeah.
That is one of my all-time favorite metal albums. Oh,
yeah, for sure. We've had this discussion. I've talked to my co-host on MSRcast, Sean, about making this happen, but we need to get you back on and just do an obscure 80s metal episode, like late 80s and early 90s when bands just started trying new things.
Right.
So that's some of my favorite era right there of thrash metal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there was so much good stuff. And, yeah, I mean, I won't. But, you know, Metal Church were one of the groundbreaking bands for that, you know, because they weren't, you know, what were they? They were thrash, but they were combining all these other elements.
They had a lot of dark elements. And
right. And then from there, you know, you had all these other bands that came out, like Mind Over Four and Mordred and Anacrusis and all these bands that, yeah, that's the stuff that from that era that I have an affinity for. I don't even necessarily listen to it a whole lot anymore, but I get in my moods and I'm like, man, I really want to hear.
Even the, you know, even like the Big Four in those early 90s, they were definitely on charting new territory, like Megadeth and Anthrax and all these bands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the stuff. I love that stuff. It just,
oh man,
Exodus was definitely like that.
Act 3, dude. By
Act 3 is one of my top 10 albums of all time. Well, I'm glad you said that.
Speaking of going, we're doing a callback here to what we were previously talking about. When I do my solo acoustic shows, I've played Veil of Deception a couple times.
Oh, wow. I'm going to go see them next month. They're playing here with Ex Mortis.
That's awesome. Yeah, love that band. I that's another one. I picked up I was one of those ones that I blind bought. I bought the Ultra Violence when it came out. I didn't know. I just saw I thought the name Death Angel was cool as hell. I thought the artwork was interesting, you know, that desolate looking artwork. And
one of those blind buys, right?
Yeah. I just bought, it was like on sale at my local record store. It
Halloween,
had just come out.
Keeper of the Seven Keys part, I think it was part two at that point, was that for me. I saw that in a store with a big, like the big pumpkin display. I'm like,
oh wow!
I was like,
oh,
you got to buy me this. I need this. I don't know what it is, but I need it in my life.
Yeah, no, like I said, for me, that was with Walls of Jericho. I bought that. I was a blind buy for me in the import bin, you know, in '86. '85.
I just got an original vinyl of that album. Like,
oh, nice.
Maybe about a month or so ago. Yeah, that's one of the bands I'm trying to collect everything original by is Halloween.
Oh, it's a shame, man. I used to have all sorts of stuff. I had the 12-inch singles. I had picture discs, and I don't have any of that anymore. It's stuff that I'm trying to buy back now, you know, because I traded it off like an idiot.
You know,
somebody said, hey, man, I'll sell you this amplifier, you know, and I'd trade them like my Halloween and Iron Maiden picture discs and singles, and boy, do I regret that.
I've done that before. What was I thinking? I'm in this Facebook it's a tape, it's a cassette CD and vinyl, it's mostly vinyl collectors group, and it's a lot of fun. One of the admins is a good friend of mine that lives here in Houston, and there's a lot of good stuff that shows up on there, and they do like these big metal Sunday events and people are just posting shit everywhere. I just got from that event the first Ludacris album, Immaculate Deception, signed by the band.
Oh, no shit.
It was like 25 bucks. I'm like, man.
That's a deal.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I finally have both Ludacris albums on vinyl. That's the kind of stuff I'm trying to go back and collect, you know, that original shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. That's the stuff to get. And if you really seek it out and you look around, sometimes you can find some gems, man.
Oh,
you know, like I've sadly passed up many of them over the years just because like I either couldn't afford it or whatever, but like, yeah, every now and then I'll stumble in somewhere and just come across stuff that I'm like, whoa, I would not expect to see these here, but you know, somebody went into a local shop and sold off their collection or whatever. And
right. You see that every once in a while here too. And it's like, oh my God, what are you doing? I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's awesome.
I definitely, next time I come up to Chicago, do some more record searching, because I did a little bit when I was there last time and had a blast. There were some good stores up there.
Yeah, the problem is there's a lot of them. There's actually a pretty fair amount of them, but they're kind of spread out. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where you got to have a car and you got to have the time.
Yep.
You know, just put aside – if you've come up for a trip and you've got at least a day to just go cruising around looking for stuff, then, you know, cool. If you got 2 days, even better. You know,
yeah, I need to come back there just to go to Kuma's.
Yeah. Yeah, Kuma's is still going strong, man. Nice. I haven't been there – in a little while. You know, we almost did our record release party there earlier this month, last month, whatever. We almost did it there, but then we ended up moving it over to Metal Monkey, which is a great place.
I saw pictures from that event.
It was a lot of fun, man. It was really cool. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's just a party, a listening party. So, you know, it wasn't a big affair, but it was really cool. You know, cool people run that place. It's a fun place to hang out. You guys would love it because it's such a metal geeks place because in addition to being like this cool brewery and, you know, all sorts of, you know, special beers and stuff on tap and everything, like one part of the place they've got set up where there's a stage and it's totally catering towards like heavy bands and stuff. But then they also have like all these tables and stuff with like shelves full of like board games and Legos and
that's cool
and like stuff. So they encourage people to come and drink and just listen to metal and like sit there and play like Risk or Stratego.
That or sounds like my fucking kind of place.
It is. Yeah. So next time you guys come out here, remind me and we'll go to Metal Monkey. We'll go hang out there. Just like have a couple drinks and just relax, play some games. It's a good chill place.
Sounds like a plan, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on this episode of Metal Geek. So let's mention that you were just on the previous episode of MSR Cast where we really dive deep into the brand new November's Doom album, Nephilim Grove. So check that out, hear music from it, hear some other music that you've picked out. And thank you. That was so much fun, man.
Yeah, no problem. And anybody, if you want to hear me talk more about geeky stuff, man, definitely come and check out Geeking Poetic Podcast. We're on YouTube, we're on Podbean and Stitcher and Spotify and all that stuff. And we have a website, which is just all one word, geekingpoeticpodcast.com. We're part of the Prescribed Films Network and stuff with a bunch of other podcasts and everything. And yeah, come check us out, man. I can talk geeky stuff all day long. And I do.
We definitely do. We will definitely have you come back on soon and then talk about some more geeky stuff and then play some more metal, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I know Megan and Vito would love to talk to you more about all that stuff, too. We had a good time last time.
We had a blast, man. So, again, thanks to Larry Roberts from November's Doom. Of course, check out the brand new album, Nephilim Grove. Check out geekingpoetic.com. And the last thing we always say on this show is keep it metal and keep it geeky.
Rock on.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, dude.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Howdy! This year, the Earth Station One podcast will experience its favorite geek out moment with episode number 500.
That's over 9 years of nerdy pop culture reviews, interviews, and con reports.
Join the celebration with Mike and Mike each week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite media player.
We can also be found all over social media or at esonetwork.com. Peace.
And we're done.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.